Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." Jesus replied, "Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you?" Then he said to them, "Watch out. Be on your guard against all things of greed. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions." And he told them this parable. The ground of a certain rich man produced a good crop. He thought to himself, "What shall I do? I have no place to store my crops." Then he said, "This is what I will do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I'll say to myself, 'You have plenty of good things laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry.'" But God said to him, "You fool. This night, this very night, your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself?" Now this is how it will be with anyone who stores up things for himself but is not rich towards God.
Morning all. Good to see you. Nice to be with you this morning. I wonder if you've ever found yourself answering the wrong question. I saw this happen at close hand. A friend of mine at Bible College was preparing for his final Old Testament Hebrew paper. This is a big kahuna, a fourth year. And he had looked at lots of past papers and practiced, and he had himself all ready to go, all primed. It got to exam day, and he went in, and he sat in there, and he downloaded all of that preparation onto the paper, and he walked out smiling. Well, the smile quickly disappeared when he received the paper back with a mark of 45% written on the front page. Now, you need to know this is a guy who'd never failed anything in his life. In fact, he had a PhD in physics. And here he was holding a paper that read "fail." Why was that? That year, the examiners had decided to change the format of the paper from the last 15 years. And he just hadn't looked closely enough. He devoted all of his energy into answering the wrong question. And the results were disastrous. Now, for my friend, there was a way out. He sat a post-exam and nailed it, some 80% mark, something sickening like that. But the rest is history. But there are times when you can't do that. There are people who've devoted large chunks of their lives into answering the wrong question. Take Anthony Juka, for example. Now, you may not have heard of him. Most people haven't. Anthony is the Queensland Monopoly champion. Yes, there is such a thing. And it sounds like he takes all of it pretty seriously. Here's a quote from Anthony. "You've got all the psychological human stuff of wheeling and dealing and probability. It's a very hardcore game. At this level, it's physical. You've got to concentrate and work so hard for that hour, it's actually quite demanding." Now, last week, Anthony took all of that preparation and all of that effort that he had put in to become the Queensland champion to the Australian Championships. Yes, there are Australian Championships for Monopoly. And the winner gets to go on and represent Australia in China next year at the World Championships. Now, Anthony travelled to Sydney and he brought his A game, only to be defeated by an 18-year-old university student who called himself YOLO Kardashian, who'd hardly ever played the game since he was a kid, who turned up not thinking he'd get in and then declared after the win, "Yeah, it's basically all luck." for Anthony, all that energy, all that effort poured into something that was futile. I wonder if you've ever had similar thoughts about your own life. I mean, there's a lot of effort poured in, right? Maybe some of you have studied really hard and got some certificates to place up on your wall, all those books read, all those papers that you had to write. Maybe some of you have worked really, really hard, put in lots of hours, done what was required by the boss to climb up the ladder, to build yourself a nice little nest egg. Maybe some of you are thinking about what's coming next. What are the plans from now on? How do I be involved with my kids and my grandkids? There's a lot of energy gone into that too. Where's it all going? What's it all for? What's it all trying to achieve? What's the question that all of that is trying to answer? If you live in Sydney in 2015, there's a question that many people are trying to answer, and it's pretty similar to the Monopoly player's question. And the question is, how much? How much do I need to collect for a win? How do I win at this? And the rush is on for real estate in the hills. Just this week, on one day, I received 8 different flyers from different real estate agents asking me if I wanted to sell them their house and telling me all about the houses that they'd sold all around the area. And prices are seen to be going crazy because of the rail line and all that kind of stuff. According to a news.com report, Australians seem to be playing the game of how much, because we've got $33 billion in credit card debt. And banks are lowering the minimum repayments. So it seems like some people will never get out of that if they just keep paying the minimum. Maybe this is you playing this game. Maybe it's not. There is a way you can tell whether you're playing the game. Here's the question to ask yourself to see whether you are playing this game. The question is, how easy do I find it to give money away? Anywhere, to friends or to charity or to church, how easy do I find it to give it away? If this might be you, this morning I want to ask you to consider things from another perspective. Is it possible that you might be answering the wrong question with the energies of your life? And I want to offer you another perspective this morning, and at the end of when I'm finished talking, I want to give you a chance to respond with those cards that you were given on the way in. So if you don't know where that is, you might want to find it now and just have it handy, because I'm going to ask you to fill it in at the end. See, Jesus gave another perspective on all of this in one interaction that he had that we just heard read to us from the Bible. And we'll look at this interaction in 3 stages. Firstly, the winning life. The winning life. Jesus was teaching and the crowds gathered. And no doubt lots of people came to get a piece of Jesus with different motives in mind. And on this day when Jesus was teaching, there was a guy with money on his mind. You know the old saying, where there's a will, there's an argument. And it seems to be true with this guy. Verse 13 of Luke 12, someone in the crowd said to Jesus, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." Now, at one level, it's astonishing that he even asks this question of Jesus, but I'll come back to that in a few moments. But this man who asked the question is captivated by the same sort of question that people are captivated by today. How much do I need for a win? And of course, an inheritance is a great way to get ahead in the game. It's money that you didn't even have to earn, you didn't have to work for. And so this guy has seen in the popular teacher of Jesus another way that he might be able to leverage some of that money to come his way, to get him forward, advance him in the game. "Teacher, tell my brother to invite the inheritance with me." And in response to this request about money, Jesus tells the story of the winning life. Verse 16, and he told them this parable. The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. So starts the story. And the guy who asked the question must have been thinking, a rich guy, a big harvest. All right, Jesus, this is my kind of story. Clearly, you know what's going down. You know what's important. It's like the wealthy man who buys the BRW Top 100 edition to see if he's in it, or to see who the rich are and how he can get on the list. This guy's ears must have pricked up. A rich man, big harvest. Yes. So what happens to the guy in Jesus' story? A rich man gets a big harvest and he thought to himself, what shall I do? I've got no place to store my crops. And then he said, this is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and I'll build bigger ones. And there I'll store my surplus grain and I'll say to myself, you've got plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat and drink and be merry. And so here he is, the rich man with a surplus. He's like the young entrepreneur, educated at Harvard. He sees an opening in the market. He goes for it hard. And his company takes off. He floats it. He has bucket loads of money to play with. More money than he can spend in a lifetime. And so he thinks, well, why be a billionaire when all the really wealthy people have $5 billion or more? And so he invests and he plays and he gets his $5 billion. And he buys a pad in London and one in New York and one in Sydney and one in the Maldives. And he buys a jet so he can flit around between the two, between all of them. And he retires at 45. And he says to himself, this is it. I've won. I've got it all. I've taken the board over. And now it's time to relax. Now, maybe most of us here aren't in quite that position just yet. I have to confess I'm a couple of bucks short of that myself. And now it's easy to hear that and say, well, sure, that'd be nice, but that's not me. You know, that's not me. But have you ever stopped to wonder, what would it be like to get that next goal that you're after? What would come after that? What would be the next goal? If you're renovating your house and you're finished, well, what then? If you're looking for the next investment and that pays off, well, then what's after that? Where would it end? Where would you stop making new goals and sit back and dip out of the game? If you're not sure, then Jesus is talking about you. This is your life under the microscope. Is it the winning life? Well, Jesus moves from setting up the story to giving us, number two, the verdict. The verdict. I wonder what words would sum up your life. Lots of people attempt to sum up their lives on their gravestones. Here's some attempts people have made. This is Merv Griffin, former talk show host, Tonight Show host in the States. I will not be right back after this message. Or take this one, Evelyn Janes, never sought gainful employment. Sums up her life. Or this guy, I've nothing further to say. Or maybe the modern version of this one is, please deactivate my Facebook. We turn back to Jesus' story of the mega rich guy, and here's the words that sum up this man's life. Verse 20, But God said to him, "You fool." How about that for an epitaph? Here lies a complete fool, signed God. Now, how could that be? I mean, this guy was the poster boy in that society. In today's terms, he would have been a media darling. There would have been people lined up wanting to know how he did it. How could God reckon him a fool? Well, he failed to recognize the fundamental reality of living life by a monopoly-style question. And the reality is, when it's over, it all goes back in the box. Look what God says to this man next, verse 20. "You fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you, and then who will get what you've prepared for yourself?" It all goes back in the box. And the box belongs to the one who made it and who made all of us. Now, this verdict from God shouldn't come as a surprise if you're reading through Luke's gospel. You see, Jesus tells this story in a context. He'd been teaching his disciples about the larger reality in which we all live. Just before this episode where we see this man, these are the sorts of realities that Jesus is talking about. Luke 12, verse 2, he says, "There's nothing concealed in our lives that will not be disclosed. There's nothing hidden that will not be made known. What you have said in the dark will be heard in the daylight. And what you have whispered in the ear in the inner rooms will be proclaimed from the roofs." When is this going to be revealed, all this secret stuff? "I tell you, my friends, do not be afraid of those who kill the body and after that can do no more. But I will show you whom you should fear. Fear him who, after your body has been killed, has authority to throw you into hell. Yes, I tell you, fear him." That's when it'll all be revealed. When eternity is before us. And in the middle of speaking about all these sorts of eternal realities and priorities, that's when the guy butts in and says, "Hey, teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." You can imagine Jesus thinking, "Really? I'm talking here about God and eternity and heaven and hell. I'm talking about the real game here. I'm talking about the real question that people should be answering with their lives. And you want me to help you get more money?" And that's why Jesus prefaces his story with the punchline. Verse 15, he said to them, "Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions." The life that's all about accumulation, that's not the winning life at all. It all goes back in the box. There are no moving vans behind hearses. All the stuff that Tutankhamun tried to take with him, it's all been nicked and put in museums. Jesus is saying, if you have lived your life answering the question, "How much for a win?" you've been answering the wrong question. But here's the thing. There's no chance to resit the exam. And it's God putting the mark on our lives. The mark for answering the wrong question is a fail. "You fool," he will say. And then there are eternal consequences to deal with. We get one life, one go to answer the right question, but all of eternity to live with the aftermath. Which brings us to the final point. Number three, the choice. Jesus tells the story of the so-called winning life, and he gives the verdict on that sort of life. And then he gives the punchline, verse 24, Luke 12. This is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich toward God. What does it mean to be rich toward God? Because it seems pretty clear here that the way to avoid that verdict of "you fool" and the eternal consequences that come after that is to do that, to be rich toward God. But what does it mean? Because if you knew what it meant, you could live like that, then you could know, couldn't you? You could know what the real question in life is, and you could put all your energy living life in answer to that question. And then if God came suddenly to take your life, you'd have nothing to fear about the verdict that was to come. At 10 o'clock today, I'm going to interview a man by the name of David Hobbs at this point. We don't have time to do it here at 8. David normally is up there at the back on the sound desk. David has a remarkable story because a couple of years ago, he was right here in this building doing some sound training with Rich Vassallo, our production minister, and he had a massive heart attack and basically died and was revived by the paramedics. And he has a story to tell. You see, David was a well-to-do kind of guy. He was not in the mega, mega rich, but he was very comfortable financially. Had a business that took him around the world, very well respected. And very comfortable. In fact, someone in terms of this life, in terms of the winning life from a world's point of view, he was ahead of the game. He had lots of the board. But a moment came in life where God took him this close to taking him away. And was he scared? He wasn't scared at all. He wasn't scared about the verdict that God might have upon his life. Because in the midst of all of that, David had come to put his faith in Jesus, and resting in him, he knew before God that he was safe. See, to be rich towards God is to value him and his ways above all else. And none of us does that perfectly. The man in the story valued himself above everything. You look about how many times he mentions "I" or "myself." "I'll build the barns. I'll do this. I'll say to myself, live, drink, eat, and marry." And we all do this from time to time. But the good news of Luke's gospel, the good news of Jesus, is that Jesus lives the life that is always rich towards God. Jesus lives the life that always, 100% of the time, values God above all else. And that he offers his perfect life to count for our imperfect life. And when Jesus goes to the cross, he takes God's verdict of "you fool" and the eternal consequences that follow the wrath of God, Jesus takes that upon himself in our place. And he offers his life for ours so that whenever the time comes that God says, "This very night your life will be demanded of you," and it will come. The last time I checked, the mortality rate is still up around 100%. That time will come when God will say, "This night your life will be demanded of you." If your trust is in Jesus, his death in your place, his life counting for your life, there is nothing to fear. God's verdict will not be, "You fool." It will be, "Welcome home, child." And I want to give you a chance, if you've never done it before, to know that security for yourself right here, right now. I'm going to do that in a moment by praying this prayer that's now on the screen. And I'm going to give you a chance to pray it for yourself in the quietness of your own mind. Let me read to you what the prayer says first. It says, "Dear God, I'm sorry for all the times that I've lived as though life did consist of the abundance of possessions. Thank you that Jesus lived the perfect life and was always rich towards God in my place. Thank you that he died to take my verdict upon himself so that I have nothing to fear on my final day. Please help me to live a life that is rich towards God from now on. Amen." I'm going to pray that prayer now slowly. I'm going to pray it line by line. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask everybody in the room, whether you'd like to pray this or not, I'm going to ask everybody in here, if you would bow your heads and close your eyes. If you don't want to pray this prayer, you already have, there might be someone next to you or around you that would like to do this, and you will help them by doing this. So can I ask everybody to bow your head and close your eyes? I'm going to pray this prayer slowly, line by line. And if you'd like to pray this for the first time, then you echo the line in your mind and God will hear you. Let's do it right now. Dear God, I'm sorry for all the times I've lived as though life did consist of the abundance of possessions. Thank you that Jesus lived the perfect life and was always rich towards God in my place. Thank you that he died to take my verdict upon himself so that I have nothing to fear on my final day. Please help me to live a life that is rich towards God from now on. Amen. Thank you, friends. I wonder if you could take a moment and find this card and a pen in front of you. Hopefully you would have received one of these and a pen as you came in. I'm going to ask everybody if you can do this now. There is a box that you can fill in on this card with integrity this morning, no matter what you thought of what I just said. If you grab that now. It seems to me there are only four different responses that you can have to the message this morning. It may be that you already have a relationship with Jesus, that you know that he died in your place, you put your trust in him many years ago. Well, praise God if that's true. Can you tell us that? Tick that first box, write a name and a contact number or an email, and that will be an incredible encouragement to Eric, who's going to look through these cards. He'll praise God for each one of you who say that. It may be that you heard some of the things that were said today and you go, okay, maybe, but I've still got a bunch of questions. Well, that's great. There are two options there for you. You can tell us you've got questions and we'll get in contact with you, or you let us know if you'd like to do our short course called Christianity Explained, which will go through some of the things that I've said in a little bit more detail and plenty of chance to answer questions in a lounge room environment. With no pressure put on you. Let us know if that's you, and we'd love to help you with those questions. It may be that you heard what I said and you went, okay, thanks very much, but no, that's not for me. That's okay. Thanks for being here. Thanks for listening. Thanks for staying till the end. Much appreciated. I'd love to meet you and shake your hand afterwards. If you've got a particular sticking point where you go, you know what, I just can't listen to that, I'd love to talk to you about it. I'd love to hear about it. That'd be great. Let us know. That'd be really helpful for us. But it may be that you said, I'd like to start a relationship with Jesus, and you prayed that prayer for the first time today. And if that's the case, then know now, the Bible tells us the angels are partying right now in heaven, because you've crossed over from death to life. And right now, your eternal verdict with God has been secured. There is nothing to fear and nothing more to prove. So let us know if you prayed that prayer. We'd love to help you with the next steps involved. If everyone can take a moment, just fill in a name and a contact detail in one of those boxes. I left my pen down. That's all right. I'll fill it in when I get down. If you fill that in, then in towards the end of our service, we're going to take up our offertory to continue the work of the gospel here and beyond, and you can just put those cards in there. Thanks very much.